Meyer.
Ladies and gentlemen, maybe I could call our meeting to order and we could take our seats. My name is Tom Berger, and I'm conducting the Alaska Native Review Commission. This is to examine the impact of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971, the way in which it's worked out, the good points, the bad points, and to give all of you an opportunity to say whatever you want to say about it, what you think, what your opinion is. This commission was established by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. And the commission is co-sponsored by the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an organization of Indians from North and South America. And both of these organizations are affiliated to the United Nations. I've been holding meetings throughout Alaska now since February, and we've held meetings at Amonok and Tununuk on the Bering Sea coast. We've held meetings at Gulkana and Copper Center in the Otna region. The students at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, the Native students, asked us to hold a meeting there. So we went there a few weeks ago, and about 35 Native students spoke to the commission there. We held meetings in downtown Fairbanks, and we held meetings in Juneau and Sitka earlier this week. And tomorrow we're going, not tomorrow, but on Monday, we're going to Ketchikan and then to Klawak, and then next month we're going to Point Hope in the on the North Slope and then to the Northwest Coast. So we hope to obtain the views of Alaska Natives and Alaskans of all races on ANCSA, on the corporate structure, the way it's worked, your own assessment of it, your own opinion about it. We want to hear what you have to say about the 1991 issues. As you know, in 1991, as things stand, Alaska Natives will be able to sell their shares in the corporations, the regional corporations and the village corporations, if outsiders acquire enough shares after 1991, then outsiders and not Alaska Natives will control the corporations and will control the native lands of Alaska. In 1991 as well, native lands held by the corporations will become taxable, whether developed or not. And then, of course, there's the question that people raise at every meeting that we've held: what about the children born since 1971? Why aren't they entitled to be enrolled as shareholders, and what can be done to enable them to become participants in the settlement? Then there's the question of sovereignty and native self-government that people have been bringing up wherever we've gone. So these broad questions of native land and native self-government are the questions that we'd like to hear you talk about tonight. I'm just here to listen. I'm doing some talking now because this is my only chance to talk at these meetings. But for the rest of the evening, it'll be my job to listen. Next year, I'm going to write a report about what you think based on what you've told me at all of these meetings throughout the state. And I will make proposals regarding how you should deal with these questions, 1991, land, sovereignty, and all the others. And I'll send that report to everybody who speaks here tonight, just as I promised to send it to every person who testifies in each village and in each town that we've been to thus far. Now, the only other thing I want to say is that I've been appointed by two international Native peoples organizations to conduct this commission, to hold these hearings in Alaska, because Native people in other countries and governments in other countries are interested in what happens here. You were the pioneers in 1971. Your land claim settlement was the first land claim settlement in the modern era. And the whole world was watching when your claims were settled back in 1971. That was the model for settling land claims in other countries. And now people in those other countries want to know how it worked out here. What do you think of it 12 years later? What's your opinion of ANCSA? How's it come out? And so the report that I intend to write next year is one that will be sent to you, but it will also be of interest, will be of interest to Alaska Natives, to Native people in the Lower 48, and of course to Native people in other countries as well. So that's why we're all eager to know what you have to say about it, and that's why we're here tonight. I should tell you that my wife is traveling with me, the lady in the front row, and she has a camera and may take some pictures for the commission, if you don't mind. And this is Jeff Berliner, who's here with me. He's the sound man, and everything you say is taken down on tape by him, and then it'll be typed up, and there'll be a permanent record of everything that is said here tonight. And we will send the transcript, the typed record of what you say here tonight and tomorrow, we'll send that back to you within a few weeks. And Eileen McLean, who's from Barrow, is working with the commission. You know her. And seated beside her is Bill Hess, who's a reporter from the Tundra Times. And he'll likely be taking some pictures as well as writing about this meeting. So, having introduced all these people, let me invite you to make a presentation if you wish. If you don't mind coming and sitting here at the table and speaking there so that what you say can go into the microphone and be taken down on tape, that would be very helpful to us. And as each of you comes forward to speak, maybe you could give me your name when you begin your presentation. So that's the procedure, and we're open for business.
Justice Berger, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Ivan Gamble. I'm the president of Kootsum Incorporated, a village corporation for the village of Angoon. You have had the opportunity to speak at length to many people throughout the state of Alaska, and I have watched with great interest some of the dialogue that have developed. At the outset of the ANCSA debate, the natives of Alaska sent our best to argue for our rights. Some of them have testified before you who deserve pride in their accomplishments. Their names are Legion in Alaska, Borbridge, Hensley, Malott, just to mention a few. These people were our best for a simple reason, that they had established some territory in the white man's world. They could speak in the ways of the white man. ANCSA would not have been accomplished without them and others like them. The reasons that we sent them to Washington, D.C. may contain the seeds of our destruction. Can it be that they knew too well the ways of the white man? May they have forgotten for a time the culture that spawned them? In 1971, hard on the heels of a Clinton-Haida settlement, which distinguished, according to some, our original right for $7.5 million, we found ourselves at the doorstep of a new concept called ANCSA. Not only did ANCSA once again extinguish our Aboriginal rights, but it put all of our assets into corporations. A corporation has risks. It can fail. Stock can be sold. Our land is at risk, and thus our way of life is at risk. It is said that if you like hot dogs or laws, you should not go to see where either of them are being made. Out of necessity, however, I went to Washington, D.C., along with many of our people, to work on a D2 bill. I see now that these laws are a series of compromises. It is also very apparent that if you are not there protecting your rights, your concerns may be forgotten. For us, ANCSA is not one law. It is ANCSA and ANILCA. ANCSA was just the beginning for Angoon. ANILCA brought us closer to our goals. We expect that there will be other laws passed, some favorable, some not. We will be there as these laws are debated, as we have in the past. Looking back, you will see that during the formation of ANCSA, our advocates, in order to be effective, had to think like non-natives, and in their dealings, they may have forgotten many of the native gold that they had been brought up to treasure. Subsistence is a way of life here in Angoon. The word, the concept, couldn't find space in 29 pages of ANCSA. Tlingit territorial law fell by the wayside. Our basic right to survive as a people died in a committee back in Washington, so many miles away. We went back to Congress in 1975 and helped them draft ANILCA. Our corporation, Coots Newell Inc., spent upwards of $1 million to try to correct many of the problems that were brought to our attention in the passage of ANCSA. ANILCA addresses many of our concerns. It is still a compromise, however. ANCSA, like many other laws drafted by mortals, is subject to change. It will take constant monitoring to see that any changes will be beneficial to Angoon, or at least not harmful. It is often mentioned before your commission that the lands held by the corporation should be put into trust under the Indian Reorganization Act. These organizations have also been given the name of the Indian Termination Act. More land was lost under these provisions of this act than in the 100 years preceding this passage. It, like many other laws, is subject to change. Many people consider this act to have the strength of the treaty. Other people say it doesn't. It is a law like ANCSA and has been and will continue to be amended, sometimes in ways that we like and sometimes in ways we don't like. In 1991, we may all face a bitter choice. I hope that during the 7 years we still have remaining, your work and the work of others will somehow pave the way for a more enlightened version of ANCSA. In conclusion, I've only been involved in what has come to be known as ANCSA, but in looking back at the years since I became involved, since 1977, it clearly has a lot of faults. It was something that was put together so many miles away from Angoon in particular. The people that were drafting ANCSA clearly couldn't keep everybody's concerns in mind. We feel that some of ours were overlooked. We feel that the money that we've spent back in Washington, D.C. to cause changes that would complement our lifestyle was money well spent. We think that the idea of throwing people into the white man's world, into a corporation world, was a terrible deed. We feel that with the changes that we've lobbied for and have accomplished, we feel that Maybe we in Angoon will have a little more going into this fight than most people have. Some examples are that under the lobby changes that we've been able to get, our people will continue or be able to continue living like we live here in the Angoon area. Because of the way we've selected our timber, our land base, we're not under any pressure to do any logging in our backyard. We feel that, once again, the claim that has many, many faults with it. We hope that some of the people who are dealing with the 1985 study, and we hope that Congress will be able to get a copy of your study and maybe at some very future date make any adjustments they have to in order to make this thing called ANGSA work correctly. I've got copies of my comments I'd like to submit for your review, and I'd be willing to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Gamble. Thank you very much. I wonder if I could ask you a few questions about the village corporation that of which you are president. You were good enough to let me sit in on a meeting of the board of directors of the village corporation this afternoon, and that enabled me to get a good idea of the very businesslike way in which you're addressing the corporation's agenda. Could I just ask you some questions about the larger scene, so to speak? In undertaking its logging operations, or its timber operations, Kutznahu Corporation is trying to make sure that the lands in the vicinity of Angoon are not logged, but are available for subsistence hunting and fishing activities. Is that right?
That's correct. All of the lands that we've selected right around Angoon were selected with that purpose in mind. We were able to negotiate a land selection that would allow us to select pieces of land only 60 feet wide along our waterfront to make sure that the people of Angoon kept control of the immediate area surrounding the village. We selected our land in two phases, the Angoon area and then the area in Chalmers Sound down by Ketchikan. Under the Claims Act, the villages in southeast Alaska were allotted 23,040 acres. By lobbying Congress, we were able to increase our total acres to 33,000, which is an addition of 10,000. Once again, the areas and the way we selected was designed and selected specifically for the purpose of protecting the subsistence hunting and fishing areas.
Well, your timber operations then are carried on at some distance from Angoon. That being so, are they designed primarily to provide a profit for the corporation and dividends for the shareholders, or is the object as well to provide employment for people from Angoon?
One of the questions that were asked us just prior to the passage of ANILCA was that very question. We were put into an area where we had to decide between employment or preserving the area for subsistence. We had to make that big decision on exchanging job for continued protection of our area. And so our board of directors voted to protect the Angoon area by accepting the exchange off island down by Ketchikan, realizing that we were giving up jobs. But we hoped that the weight of what subsistence provided for us would outweigh the need for jobs. Our board tried to take care of that problem by instructing us as management to include clauses in all of our timber contracts that would require that a certain amount of jobs be provided for our people in the logging camps, and we've tried to accomplish that.
How has that worked out? Can you tell me generally how that's worked out, if you are, feel free to do so?
The way that would work is that in a contract, for example, we have a contract right now with Klukwan, Long Island Development, which is a subsidiary of Klukwan Corporation. We have a contract with them to log 60 million board feet for us between now and December of 1985. As part of our employment contract, we asked that they set aside all of the entry-level jobs, plus jobs, make jobs available to all of our shareholders who are qualified, for example, as truck drivers, as faulers, or whatever else. The way we've tried to provide a workforce for these jobs is we started an in-house talent bank form where we have documented and recorded the skills of all of our shareholders who might want to be employed. And as jobs become open, we go to those files, to our computers, and pull those names out and send those names on up. And they actually do the selection process out of Klukwan.
And can you say generally how that has worked out? Does it entail people leaving Yangoon for a period of a week or 2 weeks or a month to work in the timber operations?
This is probably the hardest adjustment our shareholders have had to make, is that in order for us to make a profit in our timber operations, we need to get a workforce down there that would be willing to stay throughout the whole season. Our people are primarily fishing people, accustomed to fishing close to home or right around home, or being gone for only 2 or 3 months at a time. Working in a logging camp requires that you be away for as long as 9 months at a time. And so I think this is probably one of the adjustments that our people have to work towards making if they want to be involved in the timber industry.
Are you able to, or do you feel free to refer to any figures regarding the extent to which people from Yangoon have been employed in the timber operations?
Last year we had a very small amount of number of people who applied for jobs, the reason being that we got a very late start in our timber operation. We had only 16 people who were willing to travel away that late in the year for employment, and of those 16, 13 were placed in employment. This year we've gotten a slower start, but there are people being employed.
Of the 13 that were placed last year, did the fishing season interfere with their employment? Did it interrupt it?
Yes, I think that's a trend that follows in all of the communities. All of the villages up and down the coast are primarily fishing villages, and so as the fishing season heats up, we find that a lot of our people would rather be out there than in a logging camp. And so we had a turnover that we weren't completely satisfied with, but we were kind of expecting that the first time out.
Turning to another subject, we held hearings in Sitka on Thursday and Friday of this week, the president of the Sciatica Corporation, Roger Snippen, testified, so did some others. They referred to the dispute that has gone to the district court and now to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. That is the dispute between the City of Yangoon and the Sierra Club and the Sciatica Corporation about logging on Sciatica's land selections on the west side of Admiralty Island. I told them that I wasn't interested in the dispute itself so much as any observations that they might have to make about what it shows about ANCSA, if it does show anything about ANCSA. Does it shed any light on the way that ANCSA works? I wondered if you had any comments you might wish to make about that.
I think what it did is it brought out two peoples, both Tlingit peoples. One people still tied to the land and depending very heavily on it. The other people tied to supermarkets. One group of people reside in their birthplace and the other haven't moved to the city. Both people we recognize have needs, and ours, I believe, is a lot simpler. For a large period of time, I know, after I came back to Angoon, a large number of people didn't spend money on refrigerators because of the readily available resources here. The people in Sitka, on the other hand, don't have that at their fingertips. And so their need comes in the form of cash to go hunting in the supermarkets, if you will. And so what ANCSA did is it brought that to the surface, that there clearly are, I guess, two different kind of Indian peoples, a city-dwelling Indian and one that's tied to the land. And we hope that still this late in the game that there might be a peaceful way of recognizing everybody's concerns and needs. I just might point out that the people in Sitka, just by living in the city, don't give up all of their taste for the food that we in Angoon crave so much. In fact, we have a lot of their people who travel here on an annual basis to get the same kind of food that we get from the island. And so.
You're the president of Kutsunahu Incorporated, Mr. Gamble. I take it you've thought about 1991. Can you tell me whether you favor restricting the right of shareholders to sell their shares to non-natives, that is, restrictions that would ensure that the corporations remain in the hands of native owners. Some places we've been, most places we've been, people favor that, but in some places the native shareholders have said, no, I should have the right to sell my shares on a free market in 1991. Do you have any observations to make about that?
Well, first of all, I think that 1991 was picked, that date was picked because it's supposed to have given the native corporations 20 years to make good of what Congress had not given them, but when Congress recognized what was rightfully ours, they gave us 20 years to make a go of it. 20 years is not a real number. We, as an example, in Angoon, have only received conveyance to one-third of our land, and we've only received that conveyance within the last year or 18 months. And so we haven't, or by 1991, will not have been given 20 years to make good of this thing they call corporation. And so I think that that 20-year period is not accurate, and I think that that should be adjusted according to when people receive conveyance. I think that the secret to 1991 and the selling of stock is happy shareholders. I think that's what it's all going to come down to. Under ANILCA, some of the people who lobbied in ANILCA recognized that there were going to have to be some adjustments made, and so they've allowed us a few safeguards. One of those is a provision that would allow for the shareholders to vote for what you'd call an alienation of stock that would provide for Kutsunahu, say, to have a right of first refusal. It also would provide that if one of our shareholders decided to sell some of their stock after having come to their family and to Kuchner. We were not able to buy their stock. As I understand the provision, it would allow for them to go ahead and sell to John Doe from California, but his shares would be non-voting. So we hope, along with working toward a program that would assure us of happy shareholders by 1991, we would work towards the passage of those provisions and make those amendments in our bylaws.
There's a provision in ANCSA that says 1,280 acres in each municipality should be transferred by the village corporation to the state chartered city. Is that something that has been implemented here in Angoon?
Under ANCSA it says 1,280, but under NELCA it says we could negotiate that amount down. 1,280 acres in the Angoon area represents an area 52 times as big as the community of Angoon right now. We don't feel that the city of Angoon needs all of that much land. We've made a first draft of an agreement between the corporation and the city. We've gotten copies to the city. We want to give them a chance to review it and our people a chance to review it. Then we plan on sitting down with them and try to negotiate an amount hopefully lesser than the 1,280. We don't see any big problems with it. City Council is made up of local shareholders of natives, and a full board of course is made up. And so I think we could probably reach a favorable compromise that both parties could be happy with.
Well, I don't know whether what's been suggested in other places, but do you have anything you'd like to say about that?
You're speaking possibly to the only non-fisherman in all of Angoon. I have, however, been involved with the local Fish and Game Advisory Board, and I do know that the numbers run high in Angoon against limited entry for a number of reasons. One of those reasons being that limited entry was put together to benefit the big organized fishermen. Our people in Angoon, for example, rely on fishing, but are not accustomed to keeping good records. And so every time they throw a limited entry proposal on the table, they go according to how much you've invested and how much you spent, and they go by your past records. And so in that way, a lot of our people have lost out. I think that if you were to ask that question to the people in Angoon, I think you'd find that they, 100% of the people, or close to 100%, would oppose and have opposed limited entry in the past, to no avail, however.
So. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Gamble. I appreciate the trouble you've taken and your testimony. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Justice Berger, community members of Angoon, my name is Ayel, or in English, Dean George. I come from Deshuhit, the Raven Beaver clan of Angoon, Alaska. I am not totally prepared to speak on all the issues like my predecessor Ivan Gamble. But I do have my thoughts on them, because I have grown up and have watched ASCA come about from the time of the Klinkenheidel ANSU through the Alaska Federation of Natives to the passage of ASCA, the establishment of Sea Alaska and Kutznuu as regional and a village corporation. And as Ivan has pointed out, there were many compromises along the way. And a lot of our original intent of each of legislation has never been realized. And I believe one of the original intent was for self-government of our people. And as I see it, this has not yet been realized yet either. I guess you could say that I have seen since the time of the Klinkenheidel ANSU, and as I grew, my frustration grew, because at every turn, I have run into stumbling blocks or brick walls. ANSCA has impacted myself I guess you can say very confusingly. But the biggest issue that I see before me now is 1991, and I don't believe it is a stock issue. For me, it is a land issue, because the people who do hold stock hold title to the land. And when that stock is sold, traded, or reverted back to the corporation, so does their right to that land. Like I said, I'm not totally prepared to truly talk on any of the issues. But I guess that's basically all I would really would have to say for now. And would like to come back at a different time when I'm better prepared.
Fine. Well, we'll be here this evening, and we'll be holding another hearing tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. And you and any others are welcome to come back again if you don't give us the full benefit of your views first time around. That's perfectly fine with me, Mr. George.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Lydia George. I'm a housewife. I have 8 children, 4 daughters, and 8 sons. I mean, 4 sons. And 14 grandchildren. I watched the land sue issue being debated here right in this hall by my people, by the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood. The intent was what was taken out of Alaska to be compensated for what was taken out of Alaska. But later on, as we made compromises during the land sue, it looked like all our rights was being given up. There we went on record and said we'll join the Alaska Federation of Natives, a statewide land claim, to get some of the land back for our people. The land was very valuable to the Tlingit people of Angoon. We, as people, live off the land. Subsistence is our way of life. Once the whole island was owned by the people of Angoon. So when we got in the land claims, compromise was the word. The way the laws were written, we had to compromise to get some of the land back. And what we got back for Angoon was a township. 36 square miles. Here we used to own the whole island, but we had to compromise our land. I, as a representative, felt that we lost instead of gained. I was representing the Tlingit Haida to the Central Council. I was a member of Central Council when we got in the land claim fight. We went and studied the land issues and how it's going to affect our lives. The people at that time said, get some of the land back for our children and our grandchildren. They were very strong in saying this. So I fought as hard as I could to get more land on the island. But the bill that was made in Congress only provided a township. The reason why we hold as Tlingit people and during before the land claims hold land was for trapping. Family used bays. There were one bay belonged to one family where the men trapped, hunted, and then they fished. So the people of Angoon covered the whole island. I went and did a survey in the Tlingit language. We covered the whole island with Tlingit names. And the family where they hunted and fished and trapped. We had landmarks. It was written on the hillside, on the rocks themselves, and on the mountainside. Each one of us recognized property rights of a family. As Tlingit people, we had our own laws that we lived by. So we had to give up an awful lot We had to compromise to get our land back. The land was for the people, say our young people, our children and grandchildren to build homes on, to subsist on. The territorial laws in the state of Alaska, United States, was just pushing and pushing our people aside with rules and regulations. Rules and regulations, they come in here. So a regional corporation was formed under the state laws, which is foreign to our people. Village corporation is formed under the state laws, which is foreign to our Tlingit people. It isn't our way of life. The rules and regulations that we have to abide by as of now isn't our way of life. We as people in Angoon live a life that way our ancestors lived. We had our own government, we had our own laws that we abide by, and we recognize property rights. But through the state and the corporation laws, it's not recognized. And the city government does not recognize that. But we look at it as elderly people. Say a place, Jiik, belonged to a family. Hutbe belonged to a family. Cube Cove, where the fight between Shattuck and Angoon is going on, belonged to a family from Angoon. Cube Cove belonged to Angoon. It belonged to a family that was from Angoon. This is why our young people that's in corporation aren't afraid to stand up and speak out, because they hear the elderly speak of the Tlingit laws and our way of life and how we survive without industry. The land provided for our people. I'm not realizing land being distributed to the shareholders, which I am very sad about. I would like to see the land distributed to the shareholders before 1991. It's true about the limited entry. You couldn't stop an individual from selling his permit. Suppose all of our people are very unhappy. They go and sell their share. The land is lost to us as people. Land that the elderly fought so hard to acquire. We had volunteer contributions given to the delegates to go attend the conventions and to represent Angoon. And these were very poor people. And it was a lot to give up, to give so we can get some of this land back. We have, after the land claims were settled, we had more voice, that much I can say, for the Claim Settlement Act. We can be heard. Our representatives can now go to DC and get in to the door. Before that, the Indians could not make it to get in. Doors were open to us, but we had a lot to lose to gain that recognition. It's very sad that our brothers and sisters who are a mixed race in the Sciatica Corporation is having this problem with us. It is sad, but we are looking out for our own rights. This is mixed race. They have come from a long ways. They're from the Aleutians, the Athabascan Indians, the Tsimshians, the Haidas, is what's made up of Sciatica Corporation. Hutsuneu Corporation is a Tlingit that lives right here, and the land is nearby to Angoon, and all our fish streams will be affected. It won't only affect our subsistence way of life, but our commercial fishermen will be affected too, because all the streams on the island is what they're getting through the Claim Settlement Act, and that's their selection. I talked about territorial rights or individual family rights. People who owned land was recognized by our Tlingit people. Sitka had such right to their own homeland. They had land that belonged to them. I'll use one example, the Brown Bear tribe. The Brown Bear people had historical village at Hannah's Bay, and all the Pearl Straits clear out to Mount Edgecombe was their territory for hunting and fishing. And they had to compromise this land. They had to give it up to get what we've got through the land claims. So people who understood about our Tlingit laws was very sad, not happy. We only got a little bit, so to speak, a little bit of that pie. True enough, there was some land set aside, explained to me by an attorney, for industry, so we could have money-making organization. But then we wanted land for our homes. And when we enrolled the people, probably about 4,000 people, the descendants of the Angoon people is gathered throughout the world. They had to come back to Angoon and ask who their great grandparents are to enroll in the land claims. It's what the government said, prove it. So we had to take the survey, and we covered the whole island with Tlingit names and the families that belong to each area. Some of the people had a lot to lose. I heard Basket Bay, there was land for Angoon there, but there's some other families that don't have any land to get. We had to compromise. This is how foreign the English language is to us as Tlingit people. It is a foreign government to our way of life. It is. It's very hard for us to live with, and yet we have young people who are away from Angoon, who only knows the Western culture and the way they live. and very frustrating for them to come back and find us the way we are. One example is Dean George, my son. He watched when we talked Land Sioux. He listened when the elderly gathered at my house to talk land claims and what the intent was. The intent of land claims for our people. I have to be on by the wayside and just watch what's happening, and which is very sad. There might be some money-making ventures that's progressing that makes me happy, but what if we lose all the things that the people have worked so hard for and contributed their money to gain? I am frightened. The stock certificate, there was a Vista attorney volunteer in service to America. They call them legal service in Alaska. Michael Adams, who worked on our stock certificates, and the ones who weren't enrolled, our grandchildren, are put on bag of the stock certificates. Our people set for our children and grandchildren, so my grandchildren who aren't enrolled are on my stock certificate. And I don't have their mind, 1991 comes, these grandchildren of mine. I do not know what they'll do. They're living in the towns. They're living in Sitka. But they're my grandchildren. Is there anything that you could ask me?
No, I think that I sure appreciate your giving me the history of the land suit and your own observations about the developments here in Angoon. I think that I've made notes of everything you've said, and I think that's very helpful to me, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Charlie Jim Sr., born and raised, 73 years old. I'd like to give a brief history of our Tlingit Nation. Why I want to do that is I'm opposing and objecting to 1991. Everything what's planning, I just don't like to hear it. For that reason, I want to give just a brief history. If I tell that history, it's going to take days, but I'm going to try and make a shortcut. You know, we created by God, the Tlingit people. Everything was given to our people before Russia or before any white man that come to our land. We were blessed with what we call today Indian doctors. Some call it witchcraft doctors. Our people were civilized. Nobody seems to be talking about this. Every little thing what our people touch, they thank up above. That's way before Bible ever get in our hands. They get bears, they thank up above. They would say in Tlingit, Guna Chish Apina Yeke, Hashagena Guna Chish. How did they know there was somebody up above us? And this doctor started talking to his Tlingit people. Time is going to come when you begin to see something traveling on the land with the bright eyes. Some will be flying up in the air, will make a lot of noise. Some will be traveling in the water. It's going to be so big. When you see these things, you be careful. They're going to try and take your land away from you. How did they know? I was hoping some of our leaders would come in tonight and listen in on our history. Today I would say our people are getting lost. We begin to see these things about our land. Some of the people haven't seen Angoon, but they want to make laws about our village, our Tlingit land. According to the history, I would say it's still ours. There was once at a big banquet at the Baranov. I began to talk about our land. One of the politicians got up and said, Mr. Jim, don't forget this is federal land you're talking about. Then I asked him, how did they get it? Show me the proof, then you can talk to me like that. I told him, supposing if you have a car out there on the front of this Baranov Hotel, if I go out there without your permission and sell your car, what are you going to do to me? Stopped. I begin to name our chiefs here in Angoon. In Tlingit, I belong to the Raven clan, and the first house built in Angoon, that's the one I'm taking care of. But I begin to name the Tlingits, the big chiefs. Then I ask him, which one of these guys signed the bill of sale? Show me. I'd like to see it, then I'll believe you. He stopped. About 20 minutes after when we adjourned, when we came out, quite a few began to ask me, how many of the people know these things? They know it. I began to talk to people from Cake, from Huna, but we never get a chance. I didn't have enough schooling myself. I didn't finish fifth grade. But our Tlingit law